your future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Who with it now?
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5, welcome into the bullpen with Sean Manx, Cam Smith, John Belzer behind the glass. I am Brian McDonald. Thank you for joining us. We're going to get into, of course, a lot of Super Bowl conversation before the show was over. Also going to talk Rockets. We'll start off here with Texans and, of course, Mount Rushmore plus one in the second hour. But, gentlemen, how's your week been?
It's been good. It's been good. Busy with the NBA trade deadline basically taking over.
I know you're a man that lives on the NBA trade machine. Are you having withdrawals now that you no longer have trades to contemplate?
It is a little bit of a refractory period after the trade deadline where it's hard to get back up on the the trade machine knowing.
Did we say that? I guess we did.
It's very clinical.
You're right. It is very clinical. You are correct in that. Cam, I don't know if you can follow that, but how's your week been?
It's been good.
any comments about refractory period?
No. I mean, I'm
glad.
I also enjoy doing the trade machine. I very much like doing those things.
Heard that.
Like I'm a big fantasy mock drafter. I've already started doing that.
So yeah. Who are the Chargers taking with their pick? How many simulations have you run?
Where are they? Like,
I'm probably 100.
What pick are they? 20?
They're 22 right now.
Okay. Marcus Golden.
Who?
Yeah, don't
Matthew
think
Golden.
Matthew Golden.
Golden.
Yeah.
I mean, former Coug, but mostly a Longhorn.
The thing is you, around that 22 spot, Matthew Golden's there, but Colston Loveland is also
tight
there.
End in Michigan.
And I think because he's a Michigan guy that even
and because Will Disley dropped 1,000 passes in the playoff game?
Yes. very, very much so. But I also am a big like trading back guy, so a lot of times I'll trade back to like the 30th and snag like a late second or like a third.
I think we should just go to Cam randomly throughout the show and ask him who his latest projection is to the Chargers. Yeah. I feel like Cam's had like 30 different projections.
Just give us a different scenario.
Yeah, every time we go to you, we'll have a different scenario. All right, that was more Chargers talk than I thought we'd get into in today's show. We're 2 minutes in.
What was worse, what I brought up or what Cam brought up?
Chargers talk, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'd rather talk refractory period than Chargers, yeah, to be honest.
Ugh.
Yeah, I feel like I won't need a refractory period after the Chargers because the opposite happened.
Anyway,
the bullpen, ESPN Radio, 97.5, 92.5. You have thoughts on refractory period, give us a call, HRMP Listener Line, 713-780-3776. You can call or text us at that line. Get on the conversation right now about the Houston Texans. So let's start there, like I said, with the Houston Texans. And I've kind of had this feeling after the few moves that they've made to, not really rework the coaching staff because very few changes were really made. We're talking about basically – actually, not even basically, two spots, offensive line coach and offensive coordinator. And I've started to have this feeling, and hopefully you guys can show me the other side and talk me out of it, but I've started to have the feeling that they weren't aggressive enough in remaking their offense. They're basically running it back with their offensive line philosophy, it seems. I'm sure there'll be some changes. Cole Popovich will be his own man compared to Strauss. Or they are bringing a new offensive coordinator who will undoubtedly have different ideas as far as run blocking, pass blocking, the offensive line. Probably less zone blocking scheme, more of a like a man system. But I look at that and look how poorly the offensive line played last year. You're probably bringing back most of those guys in the offensive line because you don't have a lot of room with your salary cap as far as free agency. You promoted from within offensive line coach, and even though you did bring in a new name, someone from outside the system, with your offensive coordinator, I mean, the differences between McVay and Shanahan, I mean, they're both West Coast. They're not super far apart, so I just kind of feel like, I don't know. I'm just kind of feeling like they didn't go far enough in addressing or making changes with this offensive system.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair, especially because Nick Haley is first-time play caller, just like Bobby Sloak was 2 years ago, where we don't know exactly what we're getting with Nick Haley offense, where is it going to be more McVay-oriented, or is it going to be, you know, before the last 2 years when he was in L.A. with the Rams, he was a tight ends coach for the Patriots for, I think, 5 or 6 years. Are we going to get more of that influence? And Cole Popovich, back in 2019 and 2020, was the assistant offensive line coach in New England. So are we going to get more of a Josh McDaniels-looking offense, or a offense that looks more like those kind of Patriots teams, kind of the late-era Tom Brady Patriots offenses? Or is Kaylee going to lean more into what he's done the last 2 years, which is the McVay offense, which, like you said, is more similar to a version of what we were running earlier, or last 2 years with Slowick? I think because we don't know, because he has never called plays at the NFL level, it is fair to say, so it's basically promoting from within at QB coach, or just bringing back the old
QB coach.
Yeah,
you're bringing everybody back.
Bringing everybody, promoting the assistant offensive line coach after firing the offensive line coach, and hiring a guy that we don't know what his offense looks like and has never called a play. I think it's fair to be underwhelmed with how they handled the coaching search.
Yeah, I just feel like when you look at this offense, because obviously all the attention's going to go to the offensive line for how poorly they played. And again, maybe Cole Popovich is his own man. He calls something completely different. And combined with Nick Kaylee, they completely reinvent this offensive line and their blocking scheme. But even going past the offensive line, because this conversation came up on the Killer Bees, like, well, you know, the running backs were good, wide receivers good. It makes sense to bring back those coaches. I mean, I guess. I mean, maybe they are good coaches, but Joe Mixon is just Joe Mixon. He was good before he got here. I mean, Nico Collins, I don't really attribute his ascent to necessarily great wide receiver coaches. I think it's more he just got a quarterback and he was already good. Same thing, obviously, with Stephon Diggs, the little time he was here. Like, I don't know if I really look at this coaching staff and go, okay, other than, you know, giving maybe Gerard Johnson credit for helping build up CJ, I don't really look at a lot of these guys like, okay, they created this growth on the team versus like, well, they just kind of acquired good players. And the one position where they did make a change, I don't know, it just feels like they maybe aren't taking the failure seriously enough with the offensive line. It's like you're promoting from within and bringing in like a Casario disciple with Nick Kaylee. I don't know. It just feels like they didn't seek out new ideas enough, I guess, is the kind of the overall point.
Yeah, I mean, they talked to plenty of outside people. They interviewed 15 different people for the offensive coordinator job. It's just they landed on,
they probably decided back in December they were going to hire.
Yeah, the guy that worked with Casario and went to the same college as he did.
I mean, so, like, I know I remember last week when we talked how I said I was a little more in favor of Gerard Johnson, but I think that was more because I didn't want to lose him, but because he's staying on the staff, I'm looking back, like, I like the Kaylee hire. I think there's always like a hesitation, like Sean said, somebody that's never like called plays in the NFL. But the thing is you got to start at some point. Like, yeah, it's always going to be somebody's first year of coaching. And I think even more so with that is Kaylee technically didn't even start off as like an offensive guy. Like in college, he was always like a defensive grad assistant and then like a defensive coaching assistant. So he's really only been doing the offense since like 2015. But he's got a good pedigree, and I think because he's worked with tight ends really well, and we've seen the lack of production from tight ends the last few years with the Texans, I think maybe that kind of went into it too. So at the end of the day, I mean, all the other moves don't excite me, but the more I read about Kaylee, the more I'm like, okay, you know, I'm good with this.
Yeah, it's just, and I'm partly distracted right now because the water boy is on TV. So he just delivered a hell of a drop kick to the offensive lineman he handed the ball to.
Second round pick.
Yeah, yeah. What draft grade? Would you take Bobby Boucher with the Chargers at number 22?
Edge rusher.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think you got, I mean, Khalil Mack's 1,000 years old. I think you could use Bobby Boucher on the defense.
Joey Bosa can't stay healthy. And then when he does stay healthy, he's constantly getting encroachment and offensive. starts on the defense or offensive starts. Sorry.
Offsides.
Thank you. So, yeah. No, I'll definitely take Bobby Boucher.
Yeah, I think Bobby Boucher would be a nice fit there for the Chargers. Getting back to Nick Caley, like I supported the hire Nick Caley. I don't mind the idea of the first-year play caller. And obviously, I like the idea that he came from the McVay tree. But I don't know. Something about it just kind of sits – I guess part of it is it kind of feels like D'Amico didn't make the hire. I mean, considering that, you know, he and Caley and Caceri went to college together. They spent so long together in the Patriots organization. It almost feels like in a way where, because from what I've heard is obviously the job went to Sloak the first time around. Caley seems like he was the runner-up. D'Amico was a Sloak guy, and now there's like, okay, you had your turn picking the offensive coordinator. Now we're going with my guy. I don't know. It doesn't feel, again, kind of like they just took all the steps they think. Like, I would have been fine with Caley as the offensive coordinator if they maybe had made more changes. It just feels like as far back as this offense took a step back, like they could have done more to bring in new ideas and address everything.
Yeah, I think if you would have gone differently with, and this is nothing against Cole Popovich specifically, it's just that like last year he was on this team. He was a coach on the Houston Texans who had a terrible offensive line. So
they're trying to give him credit. Like, well, he was a dissenting voice, and he didn't like what Strasser did. Like, okay, well. I mean, he was there in the meetings, right?
Yeah, I just like how dissenting was he? And if he was so dissenting and you thought that he had good ideas, why didn't you fire Chris Strasser after Halloween, after the Jets game? Like,
what? Yeah, there was so – I mean, how long did it take him to finally figure out or to get a handle on stopping the stunts and the twists? Like, you could have fired Strasser, like you said, like, Halloween at the very latest.
It, like if Popovich was this attractive of an offensive line option and he was in your building and he disagreed with your current offensive line coach who was killing you, why'd you wait until after you give up 8 sacks in the divisional round to the Chiefs, including like basically a sack on every big play late in the fourth quarter? I don't know why you would promote with it from within now instead of doing it 3 months ago.
It kind of goes back to something we talked about last week, and I think something you said, Sean, how this organization has had a history of not making the change until it just completely bottoms out. And this kind of feels like that, like, well, Sloak was bad, so we'll make that change. But it wasn't that bad, so that he could keep everybody else. It's just weird that you're saying this offense was such a disaster that you're going to fire the offensive coordinator after back-to-back 10-win seasons, divisional championships, wins in the first round of the playoffs. You're going to fire him despite all that, but he has to keep everybody that worked under the oath.
Exactly.
Are we saying basically Sloak was the only problem?
Yeah, and then that's even not getting into like continuity issues with what Nick Caley wants to do and how he wants to teach, you know, the wide receivers versus how Bobby Sloak taught the wide receivers. So if you're going to keep the wide receivers coach, the running backs coach, the coordinator, well, do they fit with what Nick Caley wants to do with his offense? Or it goes back to how much are you actually changing if you can just take out the most important part of the offensive ecosystem coaching-wise and keep everything else the same and improve? It was only a Sloak problem. Rest of the coaches are so good that it was a Sloak only problem.
Yeah, they're basically saying all the other coaches were great, but Sloak was just bringing them down.
Not only can they teach the Sloak stuff, they can teach the Nick Caley stuff too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because if you want to believe that Nick Caley is bringing in new ideas, something not radically different, but significantly
a unique
different
thing from
then why are they bring? Why are they keeping on all these guys that knew the old system?
Yeah, it's just, you know, the reasoning it's tenuous. It doesn't make 100% sense on every angle. I think it's more likely that it's two guys getting promoted or getting the job.
Scapegoated, really. I think we really had two guys scapegoated is what we had.
And then their two replacements are two guys with Nick Caserio ties.
Yeah, yeah.
I think because the Texans aren't in a rebuild. I think they kind of look at it as like, well, why do we need to get rid of
everybody. Like, I was in favor of keeping Gerard as the quarterback's coach, and you could have talked me in. I mean, I know I talked about
it's maybe, the offensive line coach. It's the fact they promoted from a terrible offensive line.
Yeah, like I could have gotten past. And actually, you know what? I would go one more running backs coach. Like, you don't get credit for Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon was already a really good running back for years before he got here. What I will give you the opposite of credit for, what I'll take away from you, is Damian Pierce turned from a guy who was like 900 yards in like 13 games or 12 games as a rookie to absolute trash under these guys' watch. Yeah. I mean, so I wouldn't have kept the running backs coach. I mean, especially since, I mean, now they're going to have to coach a new system. Like, exactly. they were coaching the West Coast Kubiak zone blocking scheme, and now they're going to more of a power gap scheme. You're saying these guys that coach the West Coast scheme also know the gap? Maybe they do, but it just feels like if you're going to be making, you know, significant changes, why are you keeping in the old staff to run a different system?
They should have brought in an old Patriots running backs coach, you know?
Yeah, let's continue the Patriots South.
Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, come on down.
Some things never change.
Kevin Falk, how would you like to
Lawrence
coach
Lawrence Maroney, what are you up to? Well, let's just name all the old...
Oh, Lawrence Maroney, good old Minnesota Gopher.
Yeah,
Minnesota Gopher. Who was the... They had two really good running backs that time.
Yeah, they did.
Who, do you remember who the other one was at the top of your head? No, you're just playing. Yeah, you're playing.
They had a lot of really good players.
No, but like the year that Lawrence Maroney was there with Minnesota, they weren't very good.
Marion Barber.
Was it Marion Barber? That's it. I was trying to remember the
Garrett Blunt.
Yeah,
I thought you were talking about the Patriots having good players.
No. Yeah. I was talking about Minnesota, because they had Marion Barber and Lawrence Maroney at the same time and still won like seven games. But
Minnesota Golden Gophers football.
Hashtag Gopher football. Yeah. All right, we got to get out. We're overdue for a break here. On the other side of the break, we're going to get into some irresponsible speculation on Texans offseason moves and a whole lot more on the Houston Texans when ESPN Radio returns on 97.5 and 92.5.
Houston's only FM sports stations, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. This is The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Welcome back into the bullpen. During the commercial break, you missed finding out that apparently I went to the high school in the 80s. I aged between segments. I thought I went to high school in the late 90s and the early 2000s, but turns out it was the 80s. So, you know.
That's what you said.
Yeah, life expectancy going down for me rapidly. I lost about 10 years during the commercial break. Not ideal. Anyway, Brian McDonald, Cam Smith, Sean Mapes, John Belmer with you. If you have any thoughts or want to jump into the conversation, send us a text or a call on the HRMP listener line at 713-780-3776. So, John, we have some audio here from Joe Mixon. You good with that? It looks like you're good to go. All right, so this was from right after the season ended with the divisional round loss to the Chiefs, but Joe Mixon, talking about the offseason coming ahead, says he thinks Caserio may have something cooking up.
I know for a fact that Nick got something cooked up right now, so definitely all excited for it, and fireworks will be here real soon.
Fireworks will be here real soon. So that was the prediction from, what, 3-4 weeks ago? And then just a few days ago, 3 days ago, whatever it was, he sends out a tweet with just a little side eyes looking. No other context.
Just eyes emoji.
Just the eyes emoji. We all know the one. So, I don't know. Maybe this is... I mean, free agency is not going to start for another month. So, it's obviously not that the Texans can't make a move, you know, tomorrow.
No. That'd be tampering.
That would be tampering. It's not even the legal tampering time, which is a whole other thing.
Illegal tampering.
Very, very illegal tampering. But... I think it's time. I mean, between what Joe Mixon said after the season ended and then with this eye emojis tweet, I think it's time for us to wildly and irresponsibly speculate on the big moves the Texans are going to make. Sean, Cam, do you have any thoughts on the big unexpected move the Texans are going to make this offseason because Caserio's going to shoot for the moon?
Yeah, well, this was right after Joe Mixon was at the Pro Bowl.
Yes.
Recruiting?
Is he recruiting?
I would say connecting, you know, networking.
Not officially recruiting because that might be a tampering violation.
Yeah, no,
he's keeping it above board.
He's networking with his fellow coworkers.
Yes. He's on LinkedIn.
In the industry. Exactly. He's making a lot of connections, putting a lot of names to faces.
Yes, shaking hands.
Maybe it's someone who he knows well from his time in Cincinnati who's maybe available. What I'm saying is, and this is completely irresponsible.
Yeah.
T. Higgins, welcome to Houston.
Ooh, okay. That's interesting. Cam, you're not buying it.
No.
You got your own reckless, irresponsible speculation?
Well, no, he has T. Higgins going to the Chargers.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you have everybody going to. No, who in the league is not going to the Chargers?
All the odds have the Chargers as the highest one to get him.
Have you placed the bet?
Not yet.
I don't know. Maybe.
Look, to say that Nick Caserio has something cooked up. I mean, that's just an obvious statement because Nick Caserio is always cooking something up in his head. And two, I feel like Joe Mixon is saying a lot of this is just saying because I guess it was kind of a disappointing end to the Texan season. And so you don't want the offseason to be gloomy. So, of course, your star player coming out and being like, oh, Nick's got something cooked up. I mean, that's going to keep a little positivity and excitement. And Texans fans, plus players talk to each other all the time and recruit each other all the time. So I'm not saying that there's not something big happening, but I just think this is just kind of like premature smoke, if you will.
Premature smoke. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was really worried about the next.
I was considering how we started off the first segment with refractory period. Yeah. I was really afraid of where we were going there with the.
I always keep it G.
Can smoke be premature? Because, I mean, if there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah.
So smoke, like, literally.
Oh, no, maybe you say he's blowing smoke.
He's blowing smoke, yes. But smoke literally cannot be premature because it's happening because there was fire.
Prematurely blowing smoke.
Okay, there we go. I think we got there.
Yes, thank you.
But the smoke itself, I'm really breaking this down. But smoke itself cannot be premature. It came from the fire, which would be a problem.
Where there's smoke.
Maybe I should have said minuscule smoke. A small amount of smoke.
Small
right
puff.
Yeah.
A little puff, just puff, little, pass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm kind of vibing with where Sean went because I think this is obvious. You know, maybe Joe Mixon's got connections to Cincinnati. Maybe he's in Caserio's ears like, hey, you know, like bring my dude in. But I don't think you're going far enough.
Oh, yeah?
As long as we're irresponsibly, recklessly speculating, I don't think it's T. Higgins.
Okay.
You're close, though.
Okay.
You know?
Devontae Adams.
No. Wrong team. We're talking Cincinnati here.
Oh.
I think...
East of Us.
They're making huge, huge blockbuster trade. Not East of Us. Huge blockbuster trade. C.J. Stroud and Nico Collins for Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase. That's it. You heard it here first. Johnny put that up on socials. You heard it here first. ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
Speaking of smoking.
Massive blockbuster
trade.
Wait,
did the Mavs GM get a new job and I didn't hear about it?
I mean, who says no?
All of Cincinnati.
Every person.
All of Cincinnati.
Somehow both teams say no.
No, if you're the Texans, you shouldn't say no because you're getting the better player in both cases.
But I still think you
said I don't know about
rookie.
That.
You get the rookie contract, CJ Stroud?
Yeah, but yeah, you're about to pay CJ after one more season.
No.
You're only getting one more season of rookie contract.
No, but Joe Burrow's almost 30. He's almost over the hill.
He's not almost 30, is he?
He's like 27. Almost 30.
Well, you know that's old. So I actually I'm with you now because you know 20.
Yeah.
I mean you as a 28-year-old.
Why would you ever trade for an older player?
Yeah, you know the aches and pains that come with that age.
I do. So. I do.
So yeah, I get you not wanting to make that move. So in the couple minutes we do have left, I guess let's get slightly more realistic. Any guys that are on the free agent market that you're looking at? Like, I know cap space is probably going to be limited, so
yeah. This
is going to take some wizardry from Caserio to figure this out as far as, I don't know, restructuring some contracts, maybe cutting some guys. I'm not sure how you'd have to do it. But assuming they can make the money work, any move that you notice from these available free agents that you've got you got Joe Mixon eyes on that you hope Caserio tries to make happen?
I'm not sure if I have the eyes on any of these guys. But, I mean, you wide receiver does seem like a spot of need, or at least not.
I mean,
maybe
I
not.
I think it's underrated. I mean, they got one guy right now you like.
Yeah, yeah. So I just pulled up the available free agents. Stephon Diggs, free agent available. Yeah, I think you got to look at Deontay Johnson. You know, just so much talent.
He's a team guy.
Actually, or either him or who's immediately. Oh my God! Here's three straight people on the spot track list of wide receiver free agents. Brandon Cooks, Deontay Johnson, DeAndre Hopkins.
Man, that's the really you're looking at,
and then Mike Williams, and then Robert Woods.
Yeah,
Chris Godwin.
He's going back to Tampa. I think that's a four.
I would say Darius Slayton. If I'm forced to be,
I would
be
like Darius
here.
Slayton more than Mechie or Hutchinson, but he still doesn't really move the needle.
Well, I don't.
If you're looking at this free agent class, and it's really like Higgins, Diggs, and
yeah. I don't think you're going to get like what Diggs was last year. Like what
free agency now?
Yeah, where you're thinking, oh my God, is this one of the best 1-2 combinations in the league? I don't think you're going to get that. I think the best you can do is try to get a starting caliber NFL wide receiver to pair with Collins, and you hope
and
to have
somebody you draft probably.
Yeah, and I was going to say you hope to have more of a Collins and an ensemble cast as opposed to a three-headed monster like they're looking for. So you're just kind of reshuffling what that wide receiver room looks like as far as like the, I guess like the stars and scrubs element of it.
That's kind of why I mean, obviously you're going to say I'm biased because I want T. Higgins to go to the Chargers, but that's why I don't think
biased.
He's going to ask for a lot of money.
No, he's
going to ask for a huge bag of money,
and that's why I don't think the Texans are going to go after him.
He's probably going to get paid more than Nico Collins.
Yeah,
because Nico was like what 3 years, 75-ish, something like that. Yeah, he's going to definitely ask for more than that. I think T. Higgins is completely unrealistic. Like if you wanted to make the big splash. And I don't think they would necessarily trade the assets this is going to take because I think it would include a first. But I would say it's more likely that they would pursue a trade for Garrett Wilson. Not that I think it's going to happen, but they'd be more likely to pursue a trade for Garrett Wilson than they would to pay the money for T. Higgins at free agency. I don't think either one's likely.
I was going to say, I think we're talking about like 1% versus 5%.
Yes.
I might go
slight like 1% versus 10%, but still it's minuscule.
Well, I'd put it at 3% and 8%.
Well, I would put it at 4% and 9%. How about that?
I'd put it at 6% and 9%.
I see. All right, Sean won. But I think what I've landed on here during this conversation and looking at the list of free agents is I think you're better off, and again, assuming you can make the money work, addressing offensive line and specifically guard in free agency, because there are a lot of names at guard that I like. Top of the list would be Trey Smith in Kansas City if they don't bring him back. But Kevin Zeitler from the Lions is an older offensive lineman. I think you could
Zach
maybe get
Zach Martin is a free agent.
Yeah,
he's old, but
I think he might retire. He was really banged up this
year.
Definitely washed watch. Will Freeze from the Colts. There's a lot of good to upper level guards where the wide receiver class in this free agency period are going to be pretty low. So I think I'm looking at if I'm addressing like priority is my biggest free agent spending is on guard. And then I'm assuming, something falls to you that's worthwhile because you always have to factor that in, but wide receiver first or second round.
So, we can do this quick because I don't know how much offensive guard talk we should do.
Are you
looking for someone to pair with Shaq Mason or is
no,
it
Shaq
replacing?
Mason's out. Yeah, like if I'm looking at my, because I the other part of this is because of their limitations with the cap, I don't.
You're going to have to cut some guys.
Well, that and I don't think because I think part of the time leading up to this we've talked about they should like replace three guys in a line, they should replace two, is like it might just be one because of their limitations and because they're going to book on hey we got a new offensive line coach, we got a new OC, those guys will fix the old guys. So what I'm kind of think they're going to go with is obviously Tunsil left, Titus at left guard. Juicer, Jarrett Patterson at center.
I prefer Patterson. But
I do too.
Yeah.
Spin big on a free agent at right guard, and then
you're trusting
Blake Fisher at right tackle. I think that's probably the offensive line you're going into the season with.
And don't sleep on them making a move at running back, because there's some pretty good free agent running backs.
I'm with that.
And with them losing, yeah, them, I don't think they're going to bring back Dayer, and you don't know what you're going to get from Pierce. And
I'm a little optimistic on Damian. If they go back to more of a zone, a gap scheme like they did his rookie year, he was really good. He was really good in that system. So I'm willing to let that happen, but I would at least like to get a better third running back than Darius for sure.
Yeah, I mean, because on this list, you're not going to go after Jones or Chubb, but Rico Dowdle is a free agent.
Is he really?
Yeah, Jalen Warren is a free agent.
I like Warren a lot.
Najee Harris is a free agent.
Javonte Williams, I don't know if he ever recovered from that knee injury, but I'd at least have a conversation with him.
Yeah, third down back.
Yeah, third down back. All right, let's wrap up the Texans conversation here on the other side of the break. We got to talk about these Houston Rockets, man. Five losses in a row. Can't close out fourth quarters. How do we fix it? We'll get into that on the other side of the break. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Welcome back into the Bullpen. Myself, Sean Manx, John Belmer. And right now we go to our fourth man who is live in the Chargers war room, Cam Smith. You have the latest update for what the Chargers will do with the 22nd overall pick.
Yes, with the 22nd overall pick in the 2025 NFL Draft, the Los Angeles Harbaughs have traded back with the Baltimore Ravens.
Okay. Oh, God, we're introducing trades into this? Okay.
Snagging a brother trade. Moving back to the 27th pick, picking up the 59th pick.
God. And okay, that's good value.
With the 27th overall pick, the Chargers select Michigan tight end Colston Loveland. And with their newly acquired second-round pick, they pick up Jack Sawyer, Ohio State.
A Michigan and Ohio State.
Wow, are they going to be able to coexist on the same team?
They better.
I mean, they already have Joey Bosa.
He gone.
Wow. Okay, that went deeper than I thought. We got trade back. We got picking up extra picks in the middle rounds.
Yeah, I really thought it was.
I thought he was just going to tell me one guy.
Marion Hampton.
All right. Excuse me. I take my fake GM duties very serious.
I could tell. Credit to you. Oh, man. All right. Someone who should, I'm trying to think of the transition there with not taking seriously, but it didn't come to me. Anyway, Rockets is what we're talking about now. Lost five in a row, Sean. A lot of fourth quarter. I don't want to call all of them collapses, but certainly they've been up in these games in the third quarter, most of them in the fourth quarter, and are not finding ways to close that game. So I guess the most obvious question here is they've been dealing with injury. You know, Jabari Smith has been out for a while since breaking his hand. Fred VanVleet's been out for a few games.
Shingun missed like three or four games
with an ankle injury. I don't really view either Jabari or Fred VanVleet as a closer, obviously, but how much of this is just, hey, they're missing two key guys in the rotation, or something more that we should have more concern about over the second half?
I think that you should have a little bit of concern about this, because this isn't only Fred VanVleet and Jabari Smith are out issue. This was an issue when they're healthy as well, when the team was fully healthy. So I think that there is some merit to being like, God, are these guys going to figure it out? And I think this just, you know, gets distilled down to that they don't have a clear hierarchy in late games scenarios among their best players. That there's not a, hey, the ball is going to be in this guy's hands every time down the court with 5 minutes left, like in this losing streak you saw the Minnesota Timberwolves do with
Anthony Edwards played
like a superstar. When you have against the Knicks, Jalen Brunson, every time down the court is going to close you out. They just don't have that guy that's ready to do that night in, night out. Shingun, their all-star, missed a couple of these games. B, it's a little harder as a big man if you can't just like dribble the ball up the court and do it yourself, that you are more of a dependent talent because you just need the pass to.
Yeah, you need an extra step to get the ball in your hand. Yeah.
And so, Amin Thompson, we love what we've seen from him. Obviously, we're just now on his finishing up his first full month as a starter. with this team. Not really there yet in crunch time to take over. Jalen Green, obviously, just so inconsistent that
you feel like Jalen wants to be that guy? Because I'm starting to hear people...
Clutch team?
Yeah, yeah. Well, one, maybe you can't rely on him because he's kind of an inconsistent shooter.
I would say that.
That certainly, I think, is a fair criticism, Jalen Green. But I'm starting to hear people talk about, like, it doesn't seem like Jalen necessarily wants to be the guy with the ball at the end of the game.
I think in years past, he did. I think that he is trying to be more of like a complete player. He's trying to get people more involved. And I don't think that necessarily needs to be his role. Like, we have our floor general, obviously, is out. And I think that's another cause for concern. We already had a hard time finding out who could close games for us. And then Fred VanVleet went out. And I think that causes even more of a concern on who's going to get the ball. Because I'm not saying it should be Fred VanVleet.
Yeah,
but he's Fred setting VanVleet, it up. He's delegated.
Yeah. Or it's just like he's just great training wheels. Or if you go to, you know, the bowling alley, he's the bumpers up on the gutters where he's not going to help you, like, actually bowl a strike, but he's going to keep some of these gutter balls from happening. That's kind of his role in these late game.
Yeah, because they have lost five in a row ever since he has gone out, and I think even more so that Minnesota game. Your star player is Sengun, and I think I read something on like the Gamecast where he didn't get the ball one time in the final 6 minutes. And, like, that is not something Fred VanVleet would ever allow.
And that goes back to Sean's comment about, it takes the extra step to get him the ball, which is, I mean, obviously guys like Jokic are going to be closers. I mean, Hakeem was way back in the day. But, it takes a lot more for the big to be that guy.
And Jokic can just dribble the ball at the court or walk up past the three-point line, just take it. Like, he can operate out there, and Sengun can do that a little bit. But he's not there yet.
Yeah. So, and like, I love Ime, but I also think it's a little bit of a reflection on the coaching staff too, with how these games are ending. Like, for why the hell is Shepherd playing all these minutes like he did in Minnesota when, one, he cannot shoot the ball? Like, he's shooting 30% this year. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he's a good defensive player, but right now he's a huge liability on offense, and he played a good amount of minutes in that Minnesota game towards the end when he should not have had any part of that.
And the Nets game, too. The Nets game was actually probably his best game of the season. It's just he also, with 40 seconds left, jacked up a three for no reason.
Then Jalen did the same damn thing. I expect bad decisions like that from the rookie, but Jalen's in his fourth year.
Yeah, exactly. That's a situation where, like, honestly, just taking a...
If they just pull the ball up, they win.
Or just like, or just take a 24-second violation. Like,
yeah, exactly.
That
yeah.
increases your chances of winning.
They're falling back into the old Rockets that we saw back in the day where everything was, we're going to get a big lead, and then we're going to continue to jack up threes, and we're not going to go back to the basics of basketball, of just scoring points.
There is a little bit of that in these games where you can see it's like they're really trying to just go for like the knockout punch. Sometimes where it's just not there, where, and part of it's like the knockout punch is a three pointer. It's like, hey, you guys can't shoot. I don't know who, what made you think that you guys can do the Steph Curry daggers, but like, just run good offense, guys. Just take your time, try to get a good shot, no matter what it is. I think it's just a bunch of inexperienced guys still making these mistakes. And obviously, they kind of vary in levels of experience. Like, you know, Jalen Green was drafted less than a year after Anthony Edwards was drafted. And you can see, you know, when they're on the court at the same time, just the vast difference, not just in like the talent and the ability of these guys, but also the composure late in games.
Like Michael Scott said, KISS, keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah.
That's what they need to do.
We're crediting Michael Scott with that one?
Yeah.
That's a Michael Scott original?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously so.
You miss 1,000% of the shots you don't take. Michael Scott. Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah. So quickly, as we wrap up here on the Rockets, I mean, they went into this stretch second in the West. They've now dropped down to fourth. And even more concerning than that, you look at who's behind them. The Lakers, who obviously got better. With the Luka trade, they're only a game back of the Rockets, and the Timberwolves, who, you know, just beat the Rockets, are now creeping a little bit closer, 3.5 back. Do you have any concern with the inabilities to close, the injuries, that I mean, they're obviously going to be in the playoffs, but the idea of having a top four seed to get home court or even avoiding the play-in is starting to get a little sketchy.
It is a little sketchy. I do think that just right now we're just talking about like a valley in their season. You know, like this is, they're not going to have another five game losing streak this season. So I think that a little bit is just catching it at the wrong time for the Rockets. I would be surprised if they're a playing team.
So after the,
I think they're most likely, if you're just telling me like most likely, they're going to be a four or five.
So, I mean, I'm not sure where you had them in the West before this losing streak and the trade deadline, but how many teams have surpassed them with what they did at the deadline?
Well, the Thunder and the Grizzlies and the Nuggets were already ahead. They didn't do anything.
Even the Grizzlies?
Yes.
I mean, they took, obviously won the series
3-1. No. Before the five-game losing streak, the Rockets were ahead of the Grizzlies.
No, he's talking about just not the standings. Just
where, like if they were to play in a playoff
series. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just
based
like,
on their trade.
So you had, had them, what, fourth, I guess, then?
Yeah.
Fourth-ish?
Yeah, fourth-ish. I would put the Lakers ahead of them now.
Okay.
I think they're the only team that probably jumped them as far as that. Maybe the T-Wolves also.
I mean, I think that if Julius Randle comes back and he's Julius Randle of old, then I would be a little concerned about
rather than just an old Julius Randle.
I mean, he's still old, but he can like they
I was just making the joke.
The Timberwolves beat our ass without him, and he was on the bench. So if he comes back and he can give you above average Julius Randle, then I think the Minnesota Timberwolves would be a cause for concern.
I think that when the team was riding high and we're all riding high. I mean, it really is just like don't get too high, don't get too low over the course of an NBA season. Where after beating the Celtics and the Cavs, people are like, Western Conference Finals on the table.
Yeah.
I thought that was a little too far, but
some of the shots that went in now don't go in. And
yeah,
these close games that you're winning by. I mean, you beat the Celtics on a game winning shot by a man. So maybe the shot doesn't go in, you lose the game, and that's kind of been the case in this losing streak. All right, we got to break it there. On the other side of the break, let's get into the NFL MVP debate. Did they get it right? And did they get it right with leaving Eli Manning out of the Hall of Fame on his first opportunity to get in? That when the bullpen returns, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. I assumed you knew. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Welcome in. Last segment of Hour 1. Coming up in Hour 2, we will continue the Super Bowl talk. Have a big question. Of course, we'll end the show with our worst people in sports and what we love in sports. And the penultimate segment will, of course, be Mount Rushmore plus one. Big words there. Penultimate. Congratulations to me.
Yeah.
Getting that. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I guess, a little pat on the back.
Yeah.
Pat on the back. I did a damn good job there. Johnny's not impressed
he
at all.
He thought that was impressive?
You're a hater, Johnny.
Is penultimate even an SAT word? I don't think it even is.
I don't know. Doesn't matter.
I think it's just long.
good job, B-Man.
Thank you. See, that's all I'm wanting. A little pat on the back occasionally. It's too late, Cam. Sean's put me in high school in the 80s, occasionally just like, hey, good job, man.
That's when they came up with this word, I imagine.
Okay, all right. ESPN Radio 97.5.
I heard the 80s were bumping.
Yeah, they were bumping. I hate you guys. All right, NFL. So they voted on some things, had some winners, some losers. Some people were angry about the winners and losers. But let's start with the NFL MVP. I don't think really the problem to me is who won or who came in second. It's kind of how they came in first, how they came in second. I think that's kind of the talking point to me. But I guess let's start with just who won, who came in second. Any problem with Josh Allen winning?
Versus
obviously Lamar.
I really don't. Yeah, I think it's it was between those two guys. Honestly, I mean
Saquon and Burrow have interesting cases, but not for first.
I think Saquon's the only one. That,
for first place, yes.
Yeah. But I think that it's a year where, you know, you can flip a coin, and honestly it could be either Allen or Lamar. You hear both sides, I'm like, yeah, both pretty compelling side. Like, I don't think there's one side that's just like flat wrong for thinking that. And I would even put Saquon in that realm of, like, you know, if you want to do something different with the award, like,
yeah, when's the last running back to win it? Adrian Peterson?
Adrian Peterson.
Like, 20, like a decade ago?
2012, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Or 2013. Something
if you're ever going to give a running back the MVP award, I mean, Saquon rushed for over 2,000, would have had the record if he,
yeah,
if,
I do
if he
wonder,
played.
I do wonder if he played the last game and got the record. Like, he probably gets, maybe he doesn't win.
I
but
don't
he,
think he wins
but
it.
But he probably steals some first place votes.
Maybe that's the case. I mean, the gap between, you know, he and, the, you know, Lamar and Allen was pretty significant.
Well, as you're about to get to, I'm not sure how much we can track logical thinking with the
yeah,
with that's how these awards were balloted. That's why I think that if you just play one more game, get the award, like, that could actually swing people's votes because
it's completely illogical. Like, so here's the problem. I have no problem with Josh Allen winning. I would have been fine with Lamar winning because Lamar had more passing yards, more passing touchdowns, more rushing yards, higher completion percentage. Like, Lamar, statistically, I thought was the winner. The argument for Allen is obviously, and you made a good point on Gallant and George, I guess it was Friday.
Thanks.
Where you said, like you said, you hate how MVP conversations turn into just who had less.
Yeah, whose teammates suck more.
Yeah, and that's really kind of like the case for Allen is he lost Diggs, and yet they were still really good, and his team won one more game than Lamar's Ravens. Mm-hmm. So I would have really been fine with Allen, and I was fine with Allen. I would have been fine with Lamar, but if I had to vote, I probably would have voted for Lamar, but no problem with Allen. The problem is, you look at the way that some of these voters broke down. Obviously, everyone's going to focus on Jim Miller, who had Lamar fourth, which is a bit crazy. But the bigger problem, and I believe Jim Miller is included in this, seven people who voted for Lamar Jackson to win Offensive Player of the Year and not Josh Allen flipped to have Josh Allen as the MVP. And you know, if like they flipped,
yeah,
for, like if you're voting for one of the two for Offensive Player of the Year, what changed for MVP?
And
like, I get the idea of like, okay, let's give MVP to the quarterback. Saquon gets Offensive Player of the Year. That, yeah, part's fine. But if you're deciding, okay, this quarterback is Offensive Player of the Year, the stats didn't change.
Yeah.
Like, why are you splitting this?
And this is something that I learned, that this isn't some sort of, like, it's not two different voting groups that do this.
No, it's the same people.
Is the exact same voting group that does all the AP awards. So
yeah,
do,
like seven people flipped it. Like they voted for Offensive Player of the Year for one of the quarterbacks and then flipped it for the other one for MVP.
Even more than that, they also voted for the All-Pro teams. Lamar Jackson was first-team All-Pro quarterback. Josh Allen was second-team All-Pro quarterback. Josh Allen, those same people voted Josh Allen for MVP.
Yeah. Cam, can you make any sense of this? I mean,
I get the, when they have the argument of, okay, who's the most valuable to the team, and then who has the best offensive year. Like, I feel like there's, you can kind of define that line.
Sure, there's a little separation
but
there.
But then when you come to the, like, you mentioned the All-Pro stuff, that right there doesn't make sense. Because if you're going to be voted the most valuable player in the league, then you should be a first ballot All-Pro.
Yeah, you should be an All-Pro.
Yeah.
Like, that's
you're,
like first
you're
team
naming you the best quarter. When you're saying this quarterback is first team All-Pro, you're saying this is the best quarterback in the league.
Yeah.
And now you're taking the second best quarterback and making him MVP?
Yeah, and it's not like a, like the old, I think it's the Maxwell Award used to be like this in college football, where it was basically the second place for the Heisman was the Maxwell. But even that, they had different voters. Like, it was a different,
yeah, if it's
the
a different,
different
voting
voted,
group, then we're not really having the
same
conversation.
Thing with, like, I think, was it this year? I think it was this year where Travis Hunter won defensive player of the year in college football, but he didn't win defensive back of the year.
Yeah, that is.
But
is
it's,
that, is
it's
this,
because two
is different,
different
voters.
Groups,
okay,
yeah,
okay.
Different people vote on those two awards, so you see how it doesn't really make sense. But you can see how different people come to different conclusions.
But
this is the same exact people. The same exact people came to a different conclusion. I don't really understand what it is, other than maybe because it's so close, and you know that people were going to be mad either way. No matter who won, people were going to be mad. Maybe it was these voters just try to kind of split the baby and, hey, you're going to get this prestigious award, Lamar, and Josh Allen, you're going to get this prestigious award. Lamar, you already have two MVPs. Josh Allen has zero.
That's the one.
So like, we're just going to kind of try to make everybody happy. And I don't know if they thought or if they knew that their votes would be public because we know who voted for who. Like, we have the names on the list.
I think that's been a thing for a while.
Like, okay, this especially doesn't make any sense.
Like, I don't put much into the idea of, well, let's make everybody happy by splitting it, because obviously the Lamar people are not happy. So that would have been a fruitless effort. I do think there's something in what you mentioned in the second half of that is just voter fatigue. Like, okay, Lamar's got two already. He won it last year. Like, do we want to make him a three-time MVP? Because that puts him in that gives him more MVPs than Mahomes. That puts him in an upper tier that maybe those people are going. And also, I think people have in the back of their minds, like, well, he's done what in the playoffs?
Yeah.
And so, like, we don't want to make him, we don't want to give him this upper tier of MVP recognition until he's done something more in the playoffs.
And these votes were before this playoffs, the ones from whatever, 2 weeks ago when Allen
beat Lamar.
Yeah. And lost to the Chiefs. I think it's more about last season's AFC title game.
You only score 7 points.
Yeah,
at home.
Ravens lose at home. They only score one touchdown. I think it's just as much about that. And this is something you see in the NBA a lot, where guys will win an MVP, two MVPs in a row, and then goes like, hasn't done in the playoffs though. So maybe we give it to this other guy. Maybe we give it to Joel Embiid, and then that's the year that Nikola Jokic actually does it in the playoffs and wins the title, and it looks especially stupid. So I think that's definitely a case of kind of the narrative and the playoff narrative getting in the way of the 2024 regular season MVP.
All right, quickly before we go to the break, yes. Eli Manning did get in his first attempt into the Hall of Fame. I think everyone assumes that he eventually gets in because most quarterbacks with two Super Bowl trophies and two Super Bowl MVPs do. So I think the question is not whether he will get in, but do you feel he deserves to be in? Cam?
Eventually.
Well, I mean, okay. You hit on something that strikes a nerve with me. Like,
you're not your first ballot guy?
No, the stats don't change. Like, I get the idea that because they limit how many people get in, not everyone can get in. Yeah. But, like, the idea of, and I'm not saying this is what you're saying, but, like, the idea of, like, well, we'll let him in eventually in year five, year six. Like, well, his stats didn't change. Like, I mean, do you think he's an actual Hall of Famer? Regardless of when he gets in, do you think he's a Hall of Famer?
I personally don't think he is. I think he gets in because of those two championships.
Yeah. Sean?
I also don't think he's a Hall of Famer, and I think he will get in. And I kind of...
I like the people in this show. John Belmore, are we going to make a unanimous sweep?
I don't think he's a Hall of Famer.
All right. See, I had to argue with the Killer Bees about this. Apparently Jeremy Branham likes terrible quarterbacks. Will Levis, Eli Manning, we're going to...
Okay, they're not terrible.
Especially since Eli Manning won because of that crazy-ass catch. Yeah. So, like,
won it because of pass rush. Like, his pass rush was crazy.
Yeah, O.C. Humanura and
Justin Tuck and Michael Strahan.
And didn't he have, like, beast of running backs with Brandon Jacobs and Ahmad Bradshaw?
I'm okay with the Hall of
Barber was on the first team.
No, he wasn't. That was the year after he retired.
Okay.
Like, I think if he had only won one Super Bowl, I don't think this would be any type of conversation.
I think even if they win the first one and beat the undefeated Patriots, but they don't win in 11, like if they just don't make the Super Bowl in 2011, I don't think we're even having this conversation.
Yeah. Even with it, like, it, I know this is going to sound absolutely ludicrous. Just remove his two Super Bowls.
Luda.
Yeah, thank you. Shout out. But, I mean, like, you just look at his regular season numbers. He never led the league in passing yards, never led the league in passing touchdowns, but he led the league three times in interceptions, and he was never an all-pro. I guess it's a difference of or a conversation of what you think the criteria to be in the Hall of Fame is. To me, you have to have been viewed at some point in your career as an upper-level top three to top five player at your position.
Yeah,
Eli Manning was never – ever considered a top five quarterback at any point during his career, much less sometimes I would say he wasn't even a top 10 quarterback in the league. Now there were some years he were.
And that some of it is because he played at the same time as his brother, Peyton.
Rivers, Breeze, Brady. Yeah.
Like, it was very hard to crack the top five back then. But really quickly, you laid out the case, the regular season case against Eli Manning. Do you think Matt Stafford's a Hall of Famer? There's a lot of times he led the league in passing. A lot of times he led the league in passing yards and stuff.
I don't think Stafford gets in. No, I would.
He's also not done though.
He's also not done. Well,
he thinks he's done. But
yeah, he's completely washed. We all know that.
disrespect.
I'd take Bo Nix over him right now. No, I'm kidding. I'm playing it to the bit. Settle down.
Go to break.
Sean just threw his headphones.
All right, we got more. You know what? We got on the other side of the break. I have to say this calmly because I got to rest the voice. But it'll be time for Price Picks and our hype train when ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5 returns.
ESPN 97.5.